It's time for Mac Break Weekly. I'm back. I missed you guys. Renee Ritchie's here. Alex Lindsay's here. Yes. And Andy Iannocco, too. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about the new iPhone, the new Apple Watch. Yes, I'm just catching up now. Some tips, some problems, some workarounds. Apple TV, too. It's all coming up next. Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 578, recorded Tuesday, October 3rd, 2017. A wider scale of anger. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Video Blocks by Storyblocks. Uncage your creativity. Get all the stock video you need for only $149 a year. Visit videoblocks.com/MacBreak. Save on millions of studio quality clips from Video Blocks. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, so build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/MacBreak. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news out of the Apple sphere. Renee Ritchie from iMores.com is here. I went to iMores as soon as I got my new Apple Watch, looking for all the tips and tricks and things I need to know about the new Apple Watch.
That's the right place to get it, Leo. I have my new one on, too, and that's what I've been learning.
Oh, did you get – what did you get, the gray or the white?
The gray ceramic.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah.
Yeah, we twinsies. Yeah.
And then your boss is going to steal it, right? I'm still using the fluoroelastomer band that came with it.
I've been testing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's time to test bands.
Yes. Just make sure it pairs right, Leo. We don't want any wrong pairings.
I have a question for you in a second, but first let's introduce the rest of the panel. Alex Lindsay is here from the Pixel Core. Thrilled to have you, Alex, using a real microphone for a change.
I know. I figured,
You sound so good.
It's easier.
You sound so much better that way. And all the way from New England, where the weather is starting to turn, Andrew Iannocco.
Last night, we had some frost on the pumpkins, as they say.
I feel like you're the official photographer of the Boston Public Library now.
They should almost give me a free library card there. I shouldn't have to pay $30 every time I visit.
No, really?
No. The Boston Public Library is indeed free.
It's free.
One of the cool things about doing NPR is that they often record when the renovations of the newer wing, meaning built 45 years ago, is that they created like an NPR radio studio in there. So I will do I did a half hour of talking tech and then was able to take my usual like afternoon long photo walk of the Boston Public Library and the public garden shooting squirrels with the new iPhones. It's a two-pronged thing where I've been taking pictures in this. That's video too, by the way.
Oh, really? That's a still out of the video? Wow. It is a video. There you go. Oh, look at him. Oh, he's so cute.
And there are things that I can only find out. I started off taking pictures of squirrels in the public garden as a joke after I think it was the iPhone 4 came out and they had this really incredibly hyper close up picture of a squirrel as one of the demo pictures. And I felt that, if I'm going to test, I'm going to have to see if I can take as good a picture. But it turns out that will test fast focusing. You'll test handling. It's test video. Yeah, I use that to test the slow motion feature. And I also have 240 frame per second video of a similar squirrel also eating.
And here's portrait lighting, the stage lighting for it. I'm not a big fan. I have to say, having now been playing with the iPhone 8 Plus since I got back on Friday, I'm not a big fan of these new filters, the studio
it's
lighting.
It's more like an alpha than a beta.
Yeah. But look how the ear of the squirrel will look cut off. It just feels like it's truncated. Not that...
Well, because... That's a really hard test case. I'll remember using AI to figure out if there's a better one. There's a bust of some dead guy, bust that actually uses portrait
that's
lighting.
My favorite Chinese dish, bust of some dead guy. Let me see here. Tell me when I get to it.
You'll see it.
Yeah.
Anything with smooth edges. Anything with smooth edges is going to look great.
And that is with portrait lighting. And I took one without portrait lighting, and it was very flat, not quite as interesting. Even so, I would say that if you look at the left edge of the head, that's a little too crisp. It's a little too sharp. But they did say that portrait lighting is a beta at this point. So I've seen well set up shots like where there's a lot of distance between the foreground and the background, where a lot of these shots look just amazing. But
you've been very impressed in it with the dynamic range. In fact, here's a shot to give you a good example.
Yeah, I believe it's selected HDR automatically for that one, but I'm also taking pictures with a pixel right next to it, and it's also allowed to use HDR if it wants. And the thing is, it didn't just capture that really subtle disc of light being projected through the windows in those doors, but you can also look at the doors themselves and see that even though they're almost black in shadow, it's like covered in a leathery substance. There are rivets and studs in it. I was very pleased with it. So, some of the HDR that I got from the iPhone 8 were kind of artificial. I wasn't posting I took an HDR picture at at magic hour in Boston Common, where you can see the skyline of Boston with the ball fields in front of it. And it was a very pretty picture, but it was a little unnatural to my eye, not as natural as the HDR Plus that the Google Pixel does. And also later on, I was taking other pictures that were that's really so cartoony that
Example. I see this a lot of kind of blown out images, and I'm not sure why the iPhone gets confused here.
That's panorama mode. There are a few things that I think that the Pixel phones do better. I think that the way that it does panoramas on Google phones is much, much better. Yeah. It's kind of annoying to have to really. I'm kind of over the idea of I'm going to have to carefully make sure the arrow is on the line. And it's going no, too fast. No, too slow. Whereas the Google stock camera app, it just basically it's almost like augmented reality. It just simply puts circle targets, ring targets, over the live image that you're looking at, and you just simply move until you line up a blue dot inside each one of those targets. So, in one of the later pictures, there's tour groups come in through the library about once an hour, hour and a half. And, nothing will ruin a panorama suddenly there are 30 tourists just standing right where you need to be. So I was in the middle of a panorama with a Google phone. I was able to simply stand there patiently, like that scene in the movie where someone is holding on to the grenade. And the moment he drops it, the grenade would go off. So I was standing there with holding the phone in place for a good 8 to 10 minutes. And as soon as the crowd left, that I could continue making the shot. So, I was really, really pleased with the iPhone 8. I still think that the iPhone is consistently my favorite phone camera, even though it doesn't necessarily always take the best pictures in every situation. It's the one that acts most like a camera, where you're there to hold up, frame, compose a picture, press a button, and get a picture. It's the most natural, the most beautiful, the most inobtrusive way to get pictures, and reliable too. So I have to say that I'm now a notch. It won't happen this year, but next year I might buy an iPhone as my daily carry. I just, it's a nice phone, man.
Well, I guess I didn't have the 8 on our vacation. But there were a couple of times when I didn't bring my big camera, my big heavy camera, with me, but instead took pictures using the iPhone. And I have to say, even the iPhone 7 Plus, I was very happy with the images I was getting with the 7 Plus. In fact, I know the 8 is an incremental. These are natural light, very low light, 60-watt bulb. Of images. I know the 8 is incrementally better, but I don't know if it's so much better that I would say to people, if you've got a 7 Plus, you should go get an 8 Plus. Would you?
No, I would agree. If for the past two or three generations, I think that Apple's been doing
good camera.
It's been for the past couple of generations, it's been incrementally better than the model that came just before it, but so much better than the one that came just before that.
Yeah.
So if you haven't bought most people will upgrade their phones on a 2 or 3 year cycle. Those are the people are going to say, oh my God, I can't believe the pictures that I can instantly tell when I look in Instagram, which ones I took with the old camera, which ones I took with the new one. But it's not a reason. It's been a while since there's been a reason to upgrade a phone just to get the new camera.
These are also, I'm interested, because even though I'm taking with a 7, I guess because of iOS 11, these are stored in HEIC format. So that's interesting. It says HEIC is the extension, but I know it's HEF.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I presume the C is just some variant on that. There is a little compression softness, but I think that's Google. These are Google photos. I don't have I don't have a Macintosh.
The biggest difference for me is that the iPhone 7 Plus took pictures I couldn't get previously, and the iPhone 8 Plus just takes those pictures better. Yeah. So it's like the textures are better, the separation is better.
But it's subtle.
Leaves and totally. Yeah.
You'd have like to do a side-by-side A-B comparison to really.
Totally, but like Andy said, it's not they don't really intend people to upgrade year after year. They mean for people who are like 2 years on, 3 years on to be getting that phone. Yeah.
I keep meaning to write a column just about, not about any particular phone camera, but about how now I really think differently about phone cameras in general, that I've stopped doing those kind of meticulous side-by-side comparisons, because I think that that's just a way to convince yourself that if you want to think that the iPhone 8 will blow away the iPhone 7, find a slightly challenging picture and then really zoom in on the pixels and say, aha, yes, yeah, I can see a little bit more noise when I magnify it by 1,000 times.
Right.
Right now, if you spend a high end for amount of money for any phone, you're almost never going to get a picture that's any less than good. And when you go from model to model, maker to maker, you're going to find that there are some situations that one phone will do better at than the others. I will say that I think that the iPhone does have one quirk that seems to remain solid since the iPhone 7. It does have a tendency to, I think that internally it's philosophically okay with the occasional blowout. Like if you're taking a picture of someone with like a shiny forehead, you're more likely to get just this blown out like dot of white on that highlight on an iPhone picture than on something I took with my Pixel or with a Samsung phone. I don't really know what that is. I don't consider it a defect. I consider it a quirk. I think it just says that if I can overexpose a little bit and make sure that the skin tones are good, for instance, skin tones are, boy, do those things pop. That's I hesitate to pick to do like selfies as part of like my test because, you know, I was lucky that I shaved that morning. I was wearing something nice because they have cameras in the studio. Normally, I might be like in work mode where, oh, God, I haven't shaved for 2 days. But I included that one at the BPL because, again, those skin, they're vibrant. They're alive. There's nothing flat about it. It was a really beautiful job.
Alex, again, you're still using the 6S because you need a headphone jack. Do you? Are you looking at these images? And you're a serious photographer, too.
No, I go back and forth. So I actually carry both a 7 and a 6S at this point. So I have both of them usually in my pocket. My 7 is my T-Mobile that I use primarily when I'm overseas. And then my 6S is the kind of the one that I'm using most of the time. But I usually have them both, and I admit that if I'm serious about a picture, I'll usually pull out my 7 and take a picture.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely step up.
I mean, just the ability to zoom makes a big difference.
You know, you get used to that zoom, and you're even if you're just going to go to 2x, just being able to just tap it and get a little bit of a closer shot.
We should say it's not great fair portrait mode to compare it to the Pixel because that's a year old phone, and tomorrow Google will announce the next generation Pixel. And one of the rumors that I would love to be true is that they will follow in LG's footsteps and do a really wide angle, do a two lens solution with 125-degree angle. And on the LG, some of the LG wide angle shots I've seen are just really great, really cool.
And just the video is also really nice with the 60 frames per second, 1080p.
Yeah.
We had a huge amount of fun with that, especially people who work on YouTube seemed especially enamored with the 60 frames per second.
It gives you kind of that GoPro. That 120 frame a second gives you kind of the GoPro feel, you know, that's right. So if someone wants to use it, that's a good solution for them.
Renee, is the iPhone 10, that's going to be the same camera, right?
It's a slightly different. Instead of 2.8, it's 2.4 on the telephoto, and both of them are optically image stabilized.
Oh, and that's not the case on the 8 Plus?
Yeah. Right. On the 8 Plus, it's the same as the 7 Plus, where the quote-unquote telephoto is still not optical.
Actually, in my opinion, a significant difference. Want OIS on that telephoto.
Yeah, you might not notice it, but if some of your pictures that you take with the zoom on the iPhone 7 or the iPhone 8 seem like they're a little less sharp than others, it's because when you zoom, and you're using the optical doubling, if you're in a low light situation, the iPhone says, okay, the light is so bad that I think that a better picture will result if I actually use the wide angle lens, the normal lens that is more light sensitive, and then just do a digital zoom than to give the person the optical zoom through a lens that can let in less light. So that will get rid of one quote problem, unquote.
Yeah. I guess the question in people's minds at this point, there are two. One is, if I have a 6 or a 6S or a 7, should I upgrade to the 8? And then the second question is, should I just skip the 8 and go right to the 10? The 10 is just as – I would say that the 8 plus is to the 7 plus as the 10 is to the 8 plus. Does that make – it's incremental. It's going to be a big difference in the screen. It's going to have face, not touch.
The true depth camera.
The camera will be better.
My opinion is that I think that the iPhone 10 has to be considered like it's a different platform and a different thing.
Different UI, partly, right? You have to swipe in ways that are different.
Yeah, you're not going to have the home button, but I predict that people are going to be over that by the first week. I think once you get used to it, I think you'll get used to it fine. It'll be like my adjustment on iOS 10 on my iPad Pro, where again I keep wanting to turn off and on Wi-Fi and keep forgetting how to do that, but then gradually, I think it's going to be a tough choice, chiefly because remember that Apple is on its second or maybe even at least its second iteration of building phones designed on this body type with the iPhone 8 and the 8 Plus. So you know that everything is really locked down very, very well. This is something with the iPhone 10, this is something they've never done before. They've never built these before in volume. There are going to be things that in this model that are going to be different in 3 months and different in the iPhone X plus one, if whatever they decide to call it. And you're not going to get a performance improvement because they're going to have the same CPUs and the same stuff like that. The only thing that makes it kind of an interesting question for people who are thinking about this is that they're probably going to be in really short supply. It's probably going to be really hard to get them when you think you want to have them. So, and given that Apple has their 2 weeks, we don't care, we don't even need a reason, just return it with the box and everything it came with and we'll give you your money back thing. For that reason, I think that it's not if you're interested in the iPhone 10 as a daily carry, it's not a bad idea to camp out in your living room with the Apple app and try to get your order in as early as possible so that maybe you'll get it within the first month with the idea that you're just going to be testing it out for 2 weeks minus 4 hours, and you'll be able to return it because believe me, by the time you get that iPhone 10 ships, you will be able to get any iPhone 8 or 8 Plus you want in any color with any size storage.
How hard is it going to be to get the iPhone 10?
Unknown, but probably really not hard. Easy.
Yeah. But there was that story in the Wall Street Journal last week about Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, God.
A pair of components in the Face ID. One of them, I don't remember which one, was delayed, and the two go together, so that's the component that's holding things up. According to the Journal, the Journal's pretty good about this, isn't it, Renee?
No, I mean, it's good. It's every generation. I mean, 1 year it's the Retina display controls. The next year it's the A series processor. The next year it's the Touch ID.
It's always hard because they have to produce in such massive quantity.
To Andy's earlier point, it's brand new technology. Yeah. They're trying to produce at scale, and this thing is full of quote unquote Rev A boards. So it's all brand new.
It's like the Essential phone, which only sold 5,000. That's not so hard, right?
Well, I mean, it's probably
when
hard
you
for
said
them
50 million, it's a it's another matter entirely.
It will be easy to get an iPhone 10. It will not be easy to get it anytime soon.
Yeah.
Right. I think that everyone that orders between midnight and 12:05 will probably get one in the first. Get one in two.
You think you'll be able to get it October 3rd? That's the ship date.
No. November 3rd.
No, I mean November 3rd. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think some people will get it?
No, I think some people will. There'll be 10 people that are, but
he believes that because China is such an important market to Apple and they've been slipping in China, and China is so status sensitive, and the Chinese market really wants the latest greatest, that the bulk of iPhone 10s that they can make will be shipped to China, not to here.
It'll probably be, I mean, if they were really concerned, they would only do the launch in the US and maybe China. That's what they've done in the past when they were incredibly concerned about supply. The fact that they're doing it, I think, of 5 or 6 or 8 even countries means they're probably not critical on the amount of volume, but it will be constrained within each of those territories.
That's a good point.
Well, constrained supply creates more press. It creates more drive, demand.
Right. It's not a horrible thing.
It's not bad for them.
Especially if you have an iPhone 8 to sell. You have something to sell people when they come in the store.
And there's also, there's a really interesting duality this year. Like when Apple went from the iPhone 5S to the iPhone 6, there were a lot of people who weren't happy. They just did not want a bigger phone for a variety of reasons. I feel it was in their hands or the design or whatever. They wanted a better iPhone 5, and it took Apple 18 months to give them the iPhone SE. And this year, you know, if Apple had just done the iPhone 10, be a bunch of people saying, I don't want that. I want Touch ID. I want a home button. I want what I want. I just want it better. And this year, they're taking a lot of pressure off iPhone 10 by saying, if all you want is the iPhone 6 or 6S or whatever that you currently have, just a lot better version of it, you can go buy an iPhone 8 today. You'll have your home button. You'll have your Touch ID. Everything you're used to. You don't have to worry about it. Nothing's going to change. Go get it. If you are bored to tears with this design, we heard you last year. If you are bored to tears with design, we have something all new for you. You got to pay a little bit of a price to get that all new thing. But if you are bored now, you can get the hot and the exciting right away.
And I think that that's actually the confusing part for me is why the 7 is still being sold. You know, I think that the 8 is close enough to the 7. The 6 gives you your headphone. The 5C is cheap and gives you a really small phone. And the 10 is different. It just seems like as the 8 came out, the 7 doesn't make as much sense.
It kept so many phones, Alex. It kept like every phone in the lineup.
I know. I just feel like we're getting back into the Apple in the mid 90s where there were so many computers that I literally couldn't buy one because I couldn't figure out which one did what I wanted it to do. And I feel like it's starting to get muddy.
There's some evidence, really too. I think that people are not trying to get the iPhone 8 in the normal quantities of past years, that there are a lot of people waiting for the iPhone 10 Slice.
And the hard part is
Slice Intelligence, which, you know, I use Slice. A lot of people use Slice to keep track of their shipments. They say the shipments are down by like half, according to the people who use Slice.
Well, it's really complex because you're going to have a lot of people who want a lot of Apple users have been trained to, you know, buy the new thing every year, and they want the new thing, the big new thing, and they're all going to wait. And then the problem is they're all going to wait, and then it's going to be 6 months or 9 months. We might get to the iPhone 11 before they finish
shipping. They'll give up, and they'll buy an 8 anyway because they couldn't get the 10, or they couldn't get it when they wanted it. Or.
Yeah.
And there's enough people with the 7 that, I mean, if you've got a 7, you can wait for quite some time.
Yeah, and plus they're not. If you really, there's only wireless charging in terms of here is a brand new thing that you will recognize as a brand new thing in the iPhone 8 that is not in the iPhone 7 right now. And of course, there's a lot more than just wireless charging. But in terms of here is how my life will be different with an iPhone 8 as opposed to my iPhone 7.
Wireless is great, though. I do really like wireless.
It's awesome.
I've always liked wireless.
And what I would love to do is put an iPhone 8 and a Nexus 4 on a table and just let them race. My new mission in life. I just got to find my Nexus 4.
It's funny. I don't know. There was, for a while, Google was making this modular phone that they had inherited from Motorola and their R&D division in the era. And I think that maybe that would be a good, if you could do it without it being janky and feeling like a Lego brick in your hand. It would be kind of cool because I want a headphone jack, for instance. I'd be willing to give up something for a headphone jack. It'd just be nice to be able to choose the things you want.
They're getting rid of more. Did you hear the rumors this year, Leo? For the bigger rumors for the Pixel leaked is that there were two prototypes, one with no buttons, which is like the HTC 11, which is, I think, the one they're going to ship, and one with no ports. But they couldn't get the wireless DFU stuff working in time. But it looks like that's where we're headed. We're heading to a point.
Oh, I agree. Why have a port at all?
No ports.
Right. Why have a port at all? Everything, it should just be a slab of glass that magically charges and magically
works. Zero mechanical failure. That's their thing. Zero mechanical failure points is their
end. You still have to have a speaker grill. Otherwise, it would be really, you could make it totally waterproof.
We say that, but we don't know what they're working on. Wireless speaker.
Aren't there speakers that go through the glass? I think there are TVs with speakers that go through the glass.
They'll be all magnetic charging, and they'll have wireless DFU.
That doesn't seem too far off. That also feels like more futuristic. Just a phone. No lightning, no Type-C, no connectors, no headphone jacks, nothing.
I have enough trouble I have enough trouble with my wireless that I think we're a long way away from doing that responsibly.
Yeah. I don't think Apple will be first. I think Apple will follow suit on that one as well.
Yeah.
It feels that's the one thing Apple might take the lead in, just because of Steve Jobs' hereditary hatred of buttons and ports.
Well, Apple TV 4K doesn't have a USB anymore. It does remote. You have to use Xcode over Wi-Fi.
Wow.
And do remote.
Yeah. Really? So that's interesting.
Step by step. Well, that's, delete all the ports, yeah, delete all the cables,
yeah,
delete.
Yeah, well, no, you're not supposed to have been using the USB port in that thing anyway. But it's
developers, it's a bummer, did, because that's who used it.
Yeah, developers did, right. But hey, they're Apple.
There's
a certain cat and dog, yeah, there's a sort of chocolate and pickles sort Animal of compatibility going on with those two things. But yeah, I had that same sort of problem with testing the iPhone 8 over the weekend, where I was at the end of the day, that's when I started doing my squirrel tests, and battery was like down to like 10%, and I wanted to use the volume button on the headphones as like a remote shutter, so that I could just sort of leave it set up and let the squirrels eat in peace without being shied away by the nerd with the hold of the camera. I said, oh, that's fine, I'll just like plug it into like this 20 million gajillion battery charger I've got. That, oh, that's right, I've got one port that has to be for both power and for the headphones, yeah, so I can't do that. It's a it's a sort of feature you don't notice it until the four times a year, some people four times a month, where it's like, boy, my life would be a lot simpler if this had it. And then you, again, think about all the phones that do have it. I was talking about on my Google show last week, that Jelly phone, that tiny, 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 I've got in the other room, tiny, tiny, tiny Android phone that is literally, if I put it behind these two fingers, you would not be able to see it. That's how small it is. And so what we're talking about, I could not resist saying, you know, here's a phone that is about one quarter the size of the iPhone 8. Somehow these random Chinese engineers were able to fit a headphone jack in there, despite, well, okay, maybe Apple's just not clever enough to be able to put everything they want and a headphone jack in. I don't know. Maybe,
you know what? You know what the iPhone doesn't have in it? An FM radio.
Yes, that's true.
Now, well, actually, I thought this was an interesting story. We talked about it on Twitter on Sunday. Of course, Ajit Pai, who has now been confirmed for a complete term as chairman of the FCC, went along with the National Association of Broadcasters. I have to point this out. There's been a move from radio and others for a long time to enable the FM radio in phones because it's good in case of emergency. And Ajit Pai blamed Apple Apple should put the FM radio in or turn it on. It's already in there.
Just flip a switch.
He says, this is Ajit Pai, quote, Apple is the one major phone manufacturer that has resisted doing so, but I hope the company will reconsider its position. That's why I'm asking Apple to activate the FM chips that are in its phone. To which Apple replied, well, we care about the safety of our users, but iPhone 7 and 8 models don't have FM radio chips in them, nor do they have antennas designed to support FM signals, so it is not possible to enable FM reception in these products. Well, now, I wonder, because we talked about this on Sunday, there isn't really a chip. It's a software-defined radio. All you need is a DSP, so they could do that. The antenna on most phones, like the LGs that do continue to have FM radios, are the headphones. That's the antenna. Of course, you don't have a headphone jack, so maybe that's why Apple called out the iPhone 7 and 8 without a headphone jack.
Well, on a lot of them, like the recent, previously Apple would buy Broadcom, I mean, most of the industry would buy Broadcom chips, and they would have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and they'd have FM radio just baked
it's
into
part
the
of
chip.
The thing.
It was just a block on the chip. But Apple doesn't buy commodity chips. Even when some of the teardown companies think they're using commodity chips, almost never do they use
commodity
chips.
So you think they've taped
anymore.
Off the FM radio stuff?
What the exact technical term is. Like, it could be dark atoms. It's just Apple asks for very specific things for a whole range of power management and other issues, and though that block is non-existent on the versions of the chips that Apple has, it's just
that's a fact that and they did call it the 7 and 8, which are the, new phones.
There are other phones that still have that block, but that block is not internally connected to anything. Like, it's not connected to any way that would help you get sound or signal, and there's no
it's
UI.
It's not a switch you could flip with existing phones, but you could put it on maybe it is with older phones.
It depends. Yeah, it depends. Unless it's like Renee's. Sorry, go ahead. You were about to say.
No, go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, like Renee says, that if you can download the spec sheets for the LTE modem chips that are in pretty much any phone, and the Qualcomm spec sheet will say that there is an FM radio decoder in there that would not be that difficult to support. But you don't know if once somebody is buying in sufficient quantity, they might ask for changes that if they don't care about the FM chip. Then that functionality goes. It's either not on the block or they just simply disconnect it for whatever reason they deem valuable. However, I do think that it's a really good thing. You're used to seeing phones that are really international. Like when Motorola came out with started coming out with phones that cost less than $200 and even less than $100, a feature that you suddenly started to see on all Motorola phones was FM radio. And you're wondering, gee, why FM radio? And the reason, and the rational reason that was the first to come to mind was that, oh, that's how people in Pakistan and India get their cricket scores off FM radio, not through streaming via broadband. This is probably the first time I have said this since Ajit Pai became director of the FCC. He's making an excellent point that there are times when I've never, thank goodness, suffered through a natural disaster anywhere close to the level that people have been going through in Puerto Rico and Texas. However, I have been in situations where the power's out for an entire week. I don't know when it's going to come back on. And a day and a half. I wish that Apple had vetted its statement a little bit better by saying, "Oh well, that's why we do care about the safety of it, because that's why we have our 911 feature and it's set up to automatically receive emergency texts from." But yeah, you're missing the point. After a day and a half, when infrastructure goes away completely, that cell tower is going to be dead in about a day and a half. Whereas there are going to be FM transmitters everywhere that you can simply pick things up. This is why after my first multi-day hurricane-related blackout, I made sure that I have multiple cheap $10 FM radios in the house, because
that's the real answer. Just buy a gosh darn radio.
Especially a hand crank one.
But again, you already have this radio. You already have this thing in your pocket.
Right.
You probably were already really, really concerned to make sure that we've got this charged up. And if I have a battery charger, I've got the charger charged up. You may not already have AA batteries and D cell batteries set aside. I can't speak to how difficult it would be for Apple to enable or add FM radio into these devices. But you can't deny that this would be a really, really good, thoughtful feature to put in.
And the radio industry has been lobbying for this. I remember NAB a year ago.
Well, and I don't think that the radio industry is lobbying for emergency reasons.
No, they just want you to listen to radio, please.
They want to listen.
To be fair, it's probably not the manufacturers, but the cell companies
are against
who would
it.
Like you to listen to expensive streaming
solutions. The iPods had this feature for a while.
Right, iPods
the
cell do
companies,
it. Yeah.
The cell companies did not want it on phones.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back in just a second. When we do, I'd like to talk about the watch, since Renee and I both have red dots.
We're dotted.
Red dots. And there's an interesting article from Horace Didiou at ASIMCO about how he's calculated sales numbers, which are pretty amazing. But first, let's talk about our sponsor, VideoBlocks, brand new sponsor on iOS today. StoryBlocks gives us video blocks, all the stock video you need, all the sound effects for your podcasts, video backgrounds on your website, the hero images in your blog. It's expensive. If you use this stock quality photos, it can be very expensive, but Video Blocks is breaking the price point. You're going to get studio quality video, stock video, royalty free. You can use it for commercial and personal projects. Everything you download is yours to use and keep forever for a very low price, $149 a year. A year. Download all the stock video your heart desires from their member library, including over 115,000 studio quality HD videos, After Effects templates, motion backgrounds, and more. New clips are added all the time. There's always something fresh to download. Exclusive discounts on the marketplace clips, too. You get 40% off, and the original artists get 100% of the sales price. So the artists love it, too. And that gives you access to 5 million additional videos that you could purchase from the artists. So they got the marketplace, they got the member library, and you have access to it all for a low $149 a year. Go to videoblocks.com/MacBreak. No more outdated or old footage. No more horrors, watermarks. 90,000 customers use video blocks, including NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. I've gotten in the habit of reading the credits at the ends of shows, and you'd be amazed how often you see video blocks in there. Videoblocks.com/MacBreak. Get all the stock video you can imagine for $149 a year and save on millions of studio quality clips from VideoBlocks. VideoBlocks by StoryBlocks. Thank you for your support and thank you for a product we now use. Saved us a heck of a lot of money. How long have you had your Series 3 watch, Renee? I just got mine yesterday, so I can't
remember. It's in a couple weeks.
Battery life?
It's fine. I mean, I think it's even
I think it's better.
It seems like it's better. I don't want to curse myself.
Yeah. Now, if you make a lot of phone calls, we know that depletes the LTE chip.
Yeah.
What about the LTE issue? We talked a lot about it on Sunday, and Greg Farrow, who has a lot of engineering experience, says this is going to be a tough one to fix. I thought it'd be easy, this captive portal
There's two problems. One is I don't think it was clearly understood that in order to use some of the functionality, your iPhone doesn't have to be with you, but it still has to be on the network. Like things like SMS as opposed to iMessage.
SMS gets sent through the phone.
Well, your number still has to be active on the phone because it's not giving you a real SMS number.
It can be at home.
Yes, it can be at home, but it has to be. And I think a lot of reporters just put it in airplane mode and then went for a jog.
Right.
And then had issues sending things like SMS.
That's not normal usage. Really?
No, but it's also wasn't clearly spelled out. Like, right. I don't think Apple was clear about how you should, how normal people were expected to use it was just leaving your phone at home, right. Not taking your phone with you, putting in airplane mode. And then also, this capture gate thing. And I think there are a lot of people who were testing it. They are engineers, and by nature, they do not trust. Like, they just will never use Starbucks Wi-Fi, for example. And this absolutely
is that why they missed testing. It? Is that why they missed it, you think?
Yeah. I mean, I know people who've been using this watch for like 3 months, 4 months, and never had noticed. Any problems with it. Yeah. I know they go to coffee shops because I see how much coffee they drink, but they're not the kind of people who would join those networks. But the basic issue is that there are a lot of places that have Wi-Fi that use captured portals. So, for example, you might just have to agree, as simple as agreeing to a terms of service and hitting OK, but it could also be a username and password. And there's no facility to do that on the Apple Watch. If you've previously joined on your iPhone, it'll remember it and it'll work transparently on your Apple Watch. But if you've never been there with your iPhone and it tries to do your Apple Watch, it'll just be stuck on Wi-Fi that can't connect. Oh. And it won't go to LTE.
I thought it was the other way around, that if you had logged in on your iPhone, the Apple Watch said, oh, I know how to be there. But with the iPhone not there, it can't get it. So it isn't that way. It breaks LTE. It breaks all connectivity in places, Wi-Fi access points that use the captive portal technology. That's when a page pops up, says log in, agree to our terms. Even if I've never been there before.
Yeah, if you have been there before, it'll work. But if it hasn't been there before, because there's no WebKit on the watch, there's no way for it to pop up a webpage.
I thought it was the other way around. I misunderstood the problem completely.
I might be misunderstanding. I believe, though, it's just there's no ability for a watch to join a new Wi-Fi point that has the captured point technology.
But why would it try to?
Because it sees Wi-Fi and it always tries. The way that the LTE works is similar to how the GPS works, in that it tries every way possible not to have to use it for battery reasons. So it's incredibly conservative. It'll jump on your iPhone instead of jumping on LTE. It'll jump on Wi-Fi instead of jumping on LTE. It only goes to LTE if it absolutely has to. So it sees, oh great, Wi-Fi connection. I'll just join that, and then it gets stuck at the portal and can't continue.
I'm a little confused. You can explain something that I'm a little bit confused on. So one of the reasons why I'm kind of interested in getting the LTE for myself is not only just the convenience, but also sometimes the battery. I'm walking around with a dead battery in my phone. I like the idea that, okay, well, at least I can still receive text messages in an emergency, even if I can't, help hop on Instagram. So if the phone is tethered to is just dead, it's turned off, no battery, no power, no nothing, what can the LTE watch do?
Everything except for regular green bubble SMS messages is my understanding.
Yeah, that makes sense because SMS is done differently. I have a phone.
Work.
I mean, T-Mobile, I'm paying $10 a month for this. I have a T-Mobile phone number.
Theoretically, it should work, but the eSIM doesn't – like the eSIM has its own number, but I believe that number is not used.
Yeah.
It'll act like it's using your phone number, and your phone number is no longer on the network.
Right. That makes
sense. That's terrible. That's really bad. If something, it's okay to optimize things for messages because Apple can do magical things if it controls end to end. But I think a lot of people are going to be thinking, well, again, I'm going to go out for a run. If I run into trouble or if I get lost or have a medical thing, I can still send and receive a text message to my friends, to my boss, to my spouse who does not necessarily have messages on his phone. And to have that, to add the Codasil, that will, if you get hit by a car and you need to tell your spouse that you're going to the hospital, don't worry. So long as your phone matches a certain set of constrictions back at home in your office, you might be able to get a text message out. If that's the case, that's terrible. That is a terrible implementation. That's not what people are expecting when Apple says we have a watch that has LTE on it. That is,
well, and it's
really
not what
surprising.
People got if they used, for instance, a Samsung LTE watch. It was a phone, but of course it was huge. But it was a phone. It did all the things your phone would do.
Now I feel like I have to buy one and test it out because I'm not trying to come up with a catchphrase here. My first impression of that is that is terrible.
There are things like you can't do long. I believe you can't do long distance phone calls. You can't do roaming. There's just an incredible amount of limitations on what they're able to proxy at this point. And hopefully they'll improve it. But I haven't heard what the problem is or why.
It might be hard to fix.
Well, I mean, everything can be fixed in time. It's just a question of what that eSIM is capable of doing, given the implementation they're using it for.
Well, you should know before you buy one that there are some limitations to it.
Totally. And the apps, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that apps can't do yet, whether that's just a factor of those apps updating or whether it's limitations of what the apps can access or not. Isn't clear to me yet.
Well, I think for us, we're more worried about battery life, I have to admit, than
Well, if you're not making
else.
Phone calls, the battery life is actually, my experience is with Renee,
it's
better.
No, phone calls.
But if you're making phone calls, it's going to drain
phone calls.
The thing
it's about
fast.
An hour. Yeah, about an hour.
Hour and talk then, time is Apple's spec.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's. I mean, it does everything possible not to use LTE because that is such a power hungry radio technology. Still.
I don't. That I just can't wait to sleep it. I just don't think that people who are walking to the store and they've got they're looking at two different Series 3 watches. One costs a little bit more and has LTE. The other one costs a little bit less and does not. The reason why they're going to say, I want the I can afford it. I would much rather have the LTE model. They are thinking about peace of mind. They're thinking about, the only reason why I take my phone with me when I run is in case there's an emergency. Or if I'm going out on a date and the baby's, I want to be able to make sure the babysitter can get in touch if there's a problem, but I don't want to be bothered or distracted by the phone. Again, my difficulty with this is that I don't think that people who say, ooh, LTE for only $100 more, I'll definitely get that. They are not expecting it's a kind of LTE that still requires your
LTE-ish.
Phone. And yeah, I mean, it's such a bad thing that I would think that my again, first impressions with 10 minutes worth of knowledge about this problem is that I would almost think that Apple would try not to call it an LTE watch. They would call it we have a special tethering plus that under certain circumstances, it will be able to behave like it is tethered to your phone, even though you are miles and miles away from the phone. That is, I think they're again, I'm really bothered by this.
When I looked at it and of course I'm not going to be surprised by what it does and doesn't do. When I ordered it, I looked at the fact that I can leave my phone in my car at Stinson Beach and not have to think about it and know that I can at least get some communication back and forth. And I admit that I don't have a lot of people that I interact with on a regular basis that aren't using either some messaging program I don't use SMS that often.
Yeah. And if everybody would just use Apple products, none of this would be a problem.
No. I don't think that it's just going to be Apple products. I think it's going to be, if you're using Slack, if you're using Messenger, if you're using, I'm going to bet that those are going to work.
You can't
over
use
a
Slack
network.
On your watch.
I
can
get
you?
Slack on my watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I get
The Scribble's actually pretty good.
Watch,
No, but I think their design goal for this watch, and maybe to Andy's point, they should have called it the Apple Watch Outdoors or something, is that you leave your phone at home and you go for a jog. And if you have to do phony things while you're out on the jog, you can do those. But your phone is at home when you're doing it. It's not it's not at all capable yet of being an independent device.
It is selling well. Apple claimed to be the biggest watchmaker in the world at the event. According to Horace Didio, who did the math, he believes that, in fact, Apple sold, let me give you the numbers. Rolex, which is number two, sold 1 million watches a year. Rolex had sales of $4.7 billion last year. That means about $4,700 a watch.
A Rolex.
About right for a Rolex. That's the cheap Rolex. My estimate, according to Horace, has been that Apple sold about 15 million watches in the last 12 months at an average price of $330. That puts their revenue at $4.9 billion. Indeed, $200 million higher than Rolex. It also fits with Apple's quote that their sales increased 50%. That would have been from a roughly 2 million in Q2 to 2016 to 3 million in Q2 2017. Overall, 33 million, he says, Apple Watch units he estimates have been sold since launch. A $12 billion business. That is quite a success story. That is quite a trajectory. And I see nothing wrong with those numbers. They all seem to work.
A lot of watches.
That's a lot of watches.
That's all I gotta, I'm watching.
I see more and more of them all the time.
The funniest thing for me is the people that used to see me wearing Apple watches. Like I'll go in to pay for something at a restaurant, or I'll go to use my boarding pass at an airport, or I'll go to pick up something, and the person at the counter now like holds up their Apple watch. Ha ha ha! I got one too now.
Yeah,
that was a big shift for me.
I think partly because the price went down. You're just seeing them everywhere now. I'm
Series
really,
one is way down now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite announcements. That now that there a lot of companies are sort of been alerted to the fact that you can sell a really good fitness device that wears like a watch for $200 to $280, and that's where a lot of the cool stuff with Fitbit stuff and Garmin stuff and other makers are really going. So the fact that Apple is right there in the middle of it, that's they're charging no more for the Apple Watch if you want to get it just on the ground floor than any other maker is charging, and that's even the minimum buy-in is one of the best devices in this category you can possibly buy. That's exciting.
I love this story from the Wall Street Journal. Samsung makes about $4 billion more a year making iPhone 10 parts than it does for the Galaxy S8.
There was a story like 2 years ago, Leo, where they did a Samsung event. They announced a phone, and the people there said it looked more like a parts demo for Apple than an actual phone event. And I keep thinking back to that because now you have the iPhone 10, which uses quite a lot of Samsung again.
Well, it's the Samsung screen, right? Although they're trying to second source it with LG, I think.
The panel is Samsung. They're doing a lot of other stuff underneath it, but the raw OLED is Samsung.
Again, this has to do with the vast number of phones Apple sells. The S8 will sell about 50 million phones in its first year. But that's probably a half or, a third what Apple's going to sell.
I think it seems like it's a good business model for Samsung at the moment. But if you want to ask Imagination Technologies, how it looked.
Yeah, they relied on Apple. They were the GPU manufacturer till Apple said, never mind. And now they basically bust, right?
You feel like Apple would love to not be, sharing ideas or talking to Samsung about anything. At some point, that could slide out from under them. I think that the sheer numbers that they have to produce still leaves them dependent on Samsung, but I don't know if it'll be like that forever.
O'Malik had a great post on his blog, ohm.co, about when the iPhone was announced, on just something we don't really pay that much attention to, but the chip fab, what Apple has done with custom silicon is kind of remarkable, really. This is an incredibly fast chip. I don't know if you need a chip with the speed of an A11 Bionic in any phone, But
you notice it, but you did, like, on the with the A10 on an iPhone 7, if you went into portrait mode or you did some really intense AR, you'd feel it pegging the processor. Yeah. I say I assume it was pegging, at least, because the phone would get hot and you might have some issues with, not deal breaker issues, but it would just, like, you'd feel like you were pushing that thing into the red as hard as you could go. Where on iPhone 8, it feels like it's about halfway, maybe. Like you're just cruising along and you're doing portrait mode and portrait lighting and AR, and you're letting the CPU handle all the scaling and all the, you know, and you're letting the GPU render all those textures. And it's just fine. I think the overhead is what's really nice with the A11.
Yeah.
As well as all the neural net stuff.
The headroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of headroom. You have a lot more processor than you'll likely
need.
And
the neural nets scare me, Leo. I heard them describing the neural nets. This was like I don't want to say creepy because that's not the right word, but the most thought-provoking moment for me when they were talking about the A11 chip was they were talking about training it, and they had two different neural networks, one that would identify faces and one that would try to fool it, and they're basically training each other. And no one is talking about coding machines here. They're talking about these things like they're training pets.
Yeah.
And they're just talking about – and there was another article about – not related to Apple, but where someone's like, it's gotten way more accurate, but we have no idea how anymore because they're basically just talking to each other.
Yeah. Well, I worked in it.
Go ahead, Alex.
I worked in an A-Life company in the 90s, early 90s, mid 90s. And, you know, a lot of it, we were training pets. And right. The problem is you just give it goals. You say, okay, I'm going to give you a goal of what you need to do. And you allow it to, non-entropic reduction mapping, if any of my friends from Anarch are listening. But basically, how do you derive a solution that makes that go away? You know, but it is beyond a person because it's calculating so fast. It's trying to figure out, you know, and it may come up with entirely novel solutions to something that may be good or may be bad. You know, that may do something completely off the, because it's decided that because you didn't create another constraint that says, yeah, but don't kill all your friends. you do the best you can, but don't kill it. Because, not that it did it in this case, but, you know, when you talk about it, like, you know, an organism could just be said, you know, stay alive as long as you can. And it may decide that the best thing to do is to, you know, eat all its friends and do all the other things. And that makes sense. So you have to build a constraint that says that. And so that defines that. But it is, anytime you're working with neural networks or artificial life, you are definitely dealing with some kind of bionic organism that is making calculations about it from its own personal point of view, at a rate that you can't do from the outside.
Yeah. I do have to say that this is Apple's secret sauce because I think they would love to make every single piece inside the phone. And to quote Ohm, every single event leaves me more in awe of Apple's semiconductor group. Apple's ability to design custom silicon, its new A11 bionic processing unit, a new GPU, that's the one they took off of Imagine's shoulders, new image processing chips. That we should mention this new, the one thing about the Series 3 watch is it's noticeably faster.
Yeah.
It now has its own S3 dual core processor, which makes a huge difference. Yeah. Low power wireless chips, the W2 chip, true depth camera system.
And there's 21 letters in the alphabet left, Leo.
it's really remarkable. And I think that if you, as much as I carp on Apple for not innovating and so forth, the one thing that Apple really has shown, and I guess this is really where Tim Cook's strength is because he comes from, you know, a production point of view and logistics point of view, is their ability to make more and more and more of this phone. And they've really become a giant in terms of
controllers, the T-cons, yeah. All the glue inside. Yeah.
Ultimately, that's the goal, right? They would prefer not to buy anything from Samsung, right?
They'd love not to buy anything from Qualcomm right now.
Yeah, Qualcomm especially. Does the 8 have any Qualcomm processors?
Yeah, because it still has to run on Verizon and Sprint in the US. CDMA. So they have the same Qualcomm CDMA. Modem. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was another argument about including FM capabilities, that they're using Intel and Qualcomm chips, depending on the model, even within the iPhone 8, let's say. And the other problem is, remember that there was a, I think it was with the 7, people were noticing, like, gosh, how come these two exact same iPhones are benchmarking differently from the same location, right, on LTE speeds?
Yep.
And it was because the Intel chips were faster than
No, they Qualcomm were much ones. Slower. They were half as fast.
I'm sorry, the other way around.
Yeah.
But the and so Apple's answer, I think, was to slow down the Qualcomm's modem to make sure that all of iPhones would perform the same way.
It's actually one of the points in Qualcomm's lawsuit against Apple. Yeah. They're not too happy about that.
Well, and that happens a lot. I mean,
as a user, I wouldn't be too happy.
I know. I mean, by the way, I should mention Qualcomm's a sponsor, so I have a dog in this hunt. But I won't say that.
That happens often with our chips as well. You know, the chips are, the chips that we have in our computers a lot of times can go faster than we overclock them and do all kinds of things. But a lot of times the chips, they'll decide that the reason one chip's more expensive or less expensive is because as they tested it, made it through all the tests at this speed. They're all coming out of the same fab. Right. It's just like they.
Well, worse than that, Alex.
Here and this one's good.
I've learned not. I'm going to stop buying i7 processors for laptops because of thermal constraints. The latest generations of i7s are so hot that they rarely, if ever, run at full speed. So if you look at the clocks, the nominal clock speed of an i7 processor in a laptop,
almost immediately,
you're never going to hit that. Because it's just too hot. So I'm wasting. I always buy i7s, and I think I'm wasting money because I'm never really getting the speed that you're supposed to get.
You mean
Apple's thing with like when they dual source?
Going back to i5s?
Yeah, I just use an i5.
I don't think that evens out over.
You should look at what happens because of not true in desktops, but of thermal constraints within laptops. You should look at what happens to these i7s. They're rarely running at full clock speed.
Because I know with some video, especially real time video, we definitely could see the difference between i5s and i7s. I
mean, are you using laptops?
Yeah, right. Laptops. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely like a night and day.
Really?
Kind of problem.
It shouldn't even be night and day. I mean, that's the.
It was a long time ago. It wasn't.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Don't. No, I'm not. I'm talking about the latest, the Skylakes, the Kaby Lakes, the Coffee Lakes, the latest processors.
A lot of people will just tell you not to give Intel the extra money, and you're fine with it.
Yeah.
The one thing though, when Apple does multi-source things because they make things at such huge scale, so sometimes they multi-source or dual-source the processor or the screens or other sorts of technology. Is they set a sort of a spec that they need, and some manufacturers blow right past that spec, and some just achieve it. But for Apple, as long as they meet that spec, so it's almost like if to qualify for the Olympics, you've got to run 100 meters in 10 seconds. They don't care if you run it in 9 or 8. To them, as long as you run it in 10 seconds, you're qualified for iPhone. So whether the chipset is more powerful or the modem is faster, they have set a limit in what they want for that phone, and that is what they are going to ship with. So the individual parts, it's like an implementation detail and a super nerdy detail, but they just lock that down way in advance of suppliers.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Apple's created a new page on its website that will make many people feel good until they see the transparency reports and learn what the governments have been asking Apple for lately. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, WordPress.com. 28% of the web runs WordPress. That's dominant. That's dominant. And there's good reason for it. WordPress is the best way to create your next website. If you're a business and you don't have your own website, I don't mean your own Facebook page. I don't mean your own Twitter account. I mean your own domain, your own website. You're missing the boat. You're really, you're not modern. It's like not having a phone. Every day, millions of people go online to search for local businesses. It doesn't have to be a tech company. Could be a wedding photographer. Could be a restaurant. Could be a plumber. You have to be online. And it is a great way to generate more business and more traffic and more loyalty. And I know why you haven't done it, because you don't want to be a web designer, but you don't have to be with WordPress.com. WordPress.com makes it easier for you to create a beautiful website that matches your business, and makes it easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you, to hear how you can help them. It's just good business. Your business needs an online home, and the easiest, fastest, most affordable way to do it, WordPress.com. You don't have to hire somebody. You don't need prior experience. You just go there right now, start up a page, pick a design, it's automatically going to boost your visibility with built-in search engine optimization, social sharing, so your customers can help promote your business by sharing it on their Facebook page, their Twitter account. You can activate other WordPress plugins for the functionality your business needs. I use a lot of WordPress plugins. I get AMP, for instance, the Google speed up that makes my pages on my WordPress site leolaporte.com, load faster on mobile. I actually use a ton of plugins. I really love WordPress. I'm familiar with WordPress. I've been using it for more than 10 years. And I'm really glad now. I used to have a self-hosted WordPress. Now I love WordPress.com because they do all the work. They keep it up to date. They keep it secure. You get expert support whenever you have a problem. Find out why 28% of all the websites run on WordPress, including some of the best journalisms and the best professional sites. WordPress.com/MacBreak. You get 15% off on any new plan purchase right now if you go to WordPress.com/MacBreak. Don't delay. Create a great site for your business without a lot of hassle, without a lot of trouble at WordPress.com/MacBreak. You'll even save 15%. We thank WordPress for hosting my blog for so many years and for supporting MacBreak Weekly. I've given Apple a hard time on privacy. Sometimes they always, I think their heart's always in the right place, but sometimes their actions aren't quite the same. But I think this is exactly what a company like Apple needs to do. Apple.com/privacy, where it's not just ad copy about privacy, but it really tells you what Apple's philosophy is about privacy, their approach to privacy. It has a tab to manage your privacy, which is really important, how to secure your device. This is the kind of thing with videos and instructions that everybody, you get your less techie friends to go visit this. Why two-factor is important, how to turn it on, all of that stuff. And then, of course, you go to the transparency report and you find out, oh, my God, despite all the things Apple's doing, it's getting harder and harder for a tech company these days to stay private. We've the number of requests for information by government from Apple has doubled this year. And it's not those kind of average everyday requests that, those have actually gone down. It's received a 6% reduction in the request to access devices. But the national security orders, those are the scary ones, the ones Apple can't even tell you about, those are spiking. Tripled. The secret and classified orders have tripled over the last year. And this comes from Apple's own transparency report.
I believe they were low previously, and now they're coming closer to the industry.
Oh, they were low before.
Yeah. They were getting roughly one-third what a Microsoft or a Google did. And that might make sense because they're not a server company
right
by nature. But now they're getting up to those
it
same
isn't
levels.
A huge number. You're right. So Apple got 30,000 demands to access 233,000 devices in the first half of the year. That's down 6%. But they got 3,000 requests for data on 43,000 accounts like iCloud content, stored photos, email contacts, device backups. Those are down by 15% compared to last year. They can't say exactly how many national security orders they've received. Of course, that's forbidden.
They're not allowed to. Yeah.
They're not allowed to. So they have to give you a range, 13,250 to 13,499 NSLs affecting between 9,000 and 9,249 accounts, and that is tripling. That is the largest number of national security orders Apple has ever reported in 5 years of transparency reports. All the companies are now doing these transparency reports, so we can at least know. That's not just U.S. government, by the way. This is worldwide, right?
Actually, I'm not sure. I didn't check.
I think so.
Is it? I don't know. Now, that's a good... you're right. Let me... this is their first biannual transparency report.
I know they have separate websites up for different countries, but I don't know what the legal requirements or legal restrictions are in reporting on a country-by-country basis.
Well, here's the good news. Apple.com/privacy. You can read it.
Yeah. They would, if they're being honest, they would probably have to make it international because remember that a lot of the U.S. government has a lot of mutual agreements with other other international agencies that says that we're not allowed to surveil our people, but hey, France, it would be really nice if you were to surveil these four people and tell us what you find out.
Well,
hey,
actually, the NSLs are U.S. only because that's we're the ones that do NSLs. But there is a table in here that breaks it down country by country, so you can. Yeah. You can read that and find out which countries are asking for your information. does it kind
of? I think that's why increasingly they're doing like a lot of the new stuff they've built out. It, whatever the data you have, like for example,
they don't want to know it,
or the upcoming iMessage sync. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Or the Siri data sync. Yeah. They encrypt it on your device using the keys on that device. They transit it through Apple servers, but it is a binary blob that they have absolutely no insight into. And then they give it to your other device and they delete it from their servers as rapidly as possible so that there is absolutely nothing of yours that is maintained on
yeah.
their infrastructure.
Yeah. Reed, this is a really well done. I encourage other companies to do what to step beyond a transparency report. It's a full kind of privacy page, much more than a privacy policy about what Apple does. Apple.com/privacy.
And the other thing that's really cool is that they are built like as they are doing new product development, and they highlighted this with things like Face ID. It's not that at the very end they say, we've made Face ID. Here, lawyers, go and give us a EULA that makes this private. It's they have the privacy team in there from the beginning of the idea for the product, challenging it along the ways and all the different ways that they have to do to maintain privacy, up to and including things like you cannot report that you have this type of data on your device because someone would know that that data exists then. On that device, and that's information, and you have to make sure that you know there's zero knowledge coming out of this. So they're designing it to be as much as it's design first, it's privacy first.
And I think that Apple really views privacy as a key differentiator because they can do things because they're not running advertising. They can do things that their competitors can't.
It's a it's
like
a market
and really
advantage.
On the platform.
Yeah. On the other hand, it's a disadvantage because Siri isn't as smart. They can't do a Google Now style informational page, things like that, because they don't know enough.
Yeah, well, and they know that they're stepping away from those markets, thinking that the decision is definitely, I think, made that privacy is more important to their consumers than necessarily being smarter. And people will make their own decision about that. But I think
the furor Windows users created over Cortana, Microsoft's speech assistant, because if you were going to use Cortana on Windows 10, you had to agree to all sorts of information going back to the servers because that's how Cortana needed to work. And people really resented that. They turned it off.
And they're able to do things like, for instance, they're starting to turn off the tracking. So it's throwing tracking away, after a day. They are also turning off autoplay on the videos. I mean, and I have to admit that I don't use Safari that often. And now I find myself every morning, I've kind of moved a lot of my stuff over to, I get up really early and I kind of surf around the web and I have suddenly realized, oh my gosh, if I use Safari, I don't have to, there's no videos playing ever.
And there's per site settings. So you can tell it to remember reader mode for this one site.
Hallelujah.
Like if you hate this site, you can tell it to always show me this site in reader mode, which is
really
nice.
I love that too. See, that's enough to make me want to abandon my Microsoft Surface Studio as much as I love this screen because I can't run Safari on it. And I would love to have those features. It's the auto start video by itself.
This is cute. It'll be okay. But I was like, but now I'm just like finding myself. Oh no.
It's driving me crazy.
And you open up Chrome. Yes. You open up Chrome and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't handle it. Like then you get overwhelmed. You get overwhelmed as soon as you're used to silence. Suddenly it's like everyone's yelling at me. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but it's like all at once. Maybe 7 to 9 months ago, it must have been like what it was like in the '70s when like venereal disease suddenly like made. I don't want random sex or random drugs anymore. People are, I mean, because it's not just the desktop stuff. A year ago today, I would be on my iPad Pro listening to music like in the background while I'm working and I'm doing research like on the web, but I can't do that anymore because I will be going to some completely legitimate site and some ad will autoplay and then grab the speaker away from my music app. And because the music app doesn't have a setting that says essentially be aware of when you've had control of the speaker taken away from you and then grab it back at first opportunity, I then have to tab back into that music app, restart the music playing. And this is why like now I have to listen to it's not the worst burden in the world, but it annoys me that now I have to listen to music through a separate device because otherwise these stupid ads that I don't care about have never once watched more than 2 seconds of how long it took to figure out where the close button is and then click the damn thing. I really want a good discussion with the people who sell these ads that tell me why is there anybody who doesn't hate these things? Does it make me if there's a 100-point scale of buying product A and product B and product B on the day of purchasing decision hit me with a pop-up video ad, I would not buy product B. That would be the reason.
Well, and I'm looking at you, Bloomberg and CNET both start their videos automatically, and I use CNN. Those pages. CNN. I go to those pages all the time during the shows. I've just, you know, it's very frustrating.
Yeah. But the Apple, back to security though, it's important that Apple not only trumpet one of the key advantages of their entire platform, but also educate people on why they should care to begin with. I believe that more iPhone users and Mac users care about privacy than users of any other phone or any other desktop. However, I don't believe that most, even iPhone users, are terribly aware of how important it is that they be on alert about such things, because one of the things that makes it really difficult to fight this battle is that, yes, you can decide that I'm going to take advantage of everything that Apple does for me to protect my privacy. But as soon as you go onto the web, okay, you've just lost the entire ballgame. As soon as you visit any website, and you really, it's just important for Apple to tell people, here is what it's like. Here is what we keep you in this beautiful, impenetrable dome. But here is what the mutant fighting is like outside the dome. Here's what the colonial marines have to put up with every second of their lives. It's just the scariest thing that I do for a lot of people is when I suggest that they install Ghostery or it's some sort of ad blocker. And so why is this? Okay, why is there like the number 41 next to the little ghost icon? I say, well, George, that's how many trackers and beacons and ad things it stopped from communicating. And then they realize that. So for the past several, God knows how many years, every single website I hit has been communicating back to various alien motherships at least 3 dozen times. Yeah, Jordan.
Yep.
That's how bad things is.
You
want to take back some of the comments you lofted at me in 2015 about trusting Google?
Well, we had a big, long conversation on Sunday. We don't have time for it here today, but about Silicon Valley kind of losing the trust of America and how expect government regulators to start moving in on our big tech companies because this kind of Silicon Valley, which was, you know, for many of us kind of, this is the source of innovation and growth in this country, is now being seen as starting to be seen as the enemy.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Especially when you find.
Go ahead.
Sorry, no, just again, not to turn. I can guess what the conversation was like that you don't want to get into because it takes so much time.
Well, it's a good conversation. I invite you to listen.
It's not that when you find out that, okay, number one, here's how many like Russian-backed organizations were buying ads to keep divisions stirring during the election. So, how come if they took out like a regular political ad, they'd have to identify themselves, but they weren't forced to identify themselves on Facebook or Google? I said, well, because in 2010, Google asked the federal election commissioners, is it okay if we don't have to actually comply with that? Because look how teeny these ads are. And then said, okay, you could do that, Google. Then Facebook says, hey, you let Google not have things on their ads. You should let it. Okay, fine. Look, for the car ride home, I don't want arguments. You can have what Google has. And like,
the good news
thanks,
is Facebook
guys.
Has finally started to come forward on all of this. Partly because Congress has put their feet to the fire. But they have said that they are going to let people see. Well, part of the problem was that these Russian ads were purchased, but nobody could see them except the people they were targeted at. Facebook said, now we're going to let you see the ads so you can, you know, these ads aren't going to be dark anymore. I think that's going to help a lot.
Not just for political ads, but you can just click every ad anywhere it came from, and it will show you, here are the other ads that this company, this buyer has already also bought.
That would be interesting. Yeah. If you see what the internet, what is it, the internet research, what do they call themselves, internet research committee or something, the Russian arm that's buying all these ads. If you see that they bought ads on all sides of the equation, it might be, there's something. You might be able to put a thread together.
Look for moose and squirrel.
Look how quickly things happen when a company is terrified that Congress people are going to start regulating their industries.
Yeah.
Things happen real quick.
Yeah. The Internet Research Agency. That's a good name, isn't it, for a Russian disinformation operation? A couple of quick things here. Let's see. The crackling earpiece issue, which I never experienced in the iPhone 8, has been fixed. Yep. iOS update did it. It was software.
11.0.2.
I never experienced it. Did you? Anybody?
No. No, but it was even a small, Apple always says a small percentage of users, but small percentage at iPhone levels is huge.
Hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. Yeah. So 11.02 is out. It fixes that crackling issue, addresses an issue that caused some photos to be hidden. S/MIME encrypted emails wouldn't open. I'm actually already on the, because I guess I stayed on the beta and now I'm at 11.1 on the beta. So that's public beta, I guess, right? Because I'm not a developer and the developer.
Yeah, developer. There are some people who are confused because they didn't get 11.0.1 last week. And I think they mistake the beta program for an early access program. But it's really a beta program.
Right.
So you don't get the normal releases. And then the next day, developers got 11.1. And I think 2 days later, the public beta got 11.1.
Should I turn that off, you think?
It depends. If you still want to be part of the beta program, I mean, you're getting 11.1. I just said it's not an early access program, but you are getting it before other people are getting it. So if you're happy to continue to be on the beta, that's fine. Otherwise, you just go into settings, general, profiles. You delete the beta profile.
Got it.
You reboot, and you won't be getting further betas.
Yeah, I might do that. I did it just because I knew 11 was going to come out before I got back from vacation. So I wanted to have 11 on there during my vacation. And I have to say, I love iOS 11, especially on an iPad Pro.
Yeah.
It is fantastic.
The best thing for me, the best hidden feature for me is that there was always these problems, like when you used a CMS, for example, just reordering web widgets or anything that allowed you to reorder web widgets. And because of drag and drop, I can reorder anything on Safari now. So we're just we're dragging things from files, dropping it into Drupal, pulling the images around. It all just magically works.
Wow, that's an interesting use case I didn't even think of.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I have really beefed up my control center. I don't think there's any more room on the screen for more buttons.
That video recorder is amazing. The screen recorder.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there. I loved the Apple TV remote. I can do a quick note. One thing you might want to, I wish you could take out, but you can't. The Bluetooth and Wi-Fi button. Those don't do what you think they might do.
No, they change their behavior.
They don't do anything. Or what do they do?
They terminate the current connection.
Okay.
So if you're currently on Wi-Fi.
And they terminate. And they terminate with external connections, right? I mean, they.
It doesn't turn off the radio. So the problem they were trying to solve is that people were hitting those buttons and then not understanding why their Apple Pencil or their Apple Watch or something else didn't work anymore. So now what that does is it'll...
Those things aren't going to work.
Yeah, but it's not transparent to, I guess, mainstream people that that's how that technology works.
So you can still turn off Bluetooth. You just have to do it in settings.
If you want to turn off the radio, you go to settings. If you want to kill whatever the current connection is, like you're in Starbucks and you really don't want to use Starbucks Wi-Fi, you hit the Wi-Fi button, it'll kill Starbucks Wi-Fi, but it'll keep sending Wi-Fi between your phone and your Apple
Watch. That's actually useful if they would communicate that.
Yes.
Because oftentimes that's all I want to do, and I have to turn off Wi-Fi. But what I really don't want is just whatever that Wi-Fi signal I'm on right now that I don't really want to be on.
Leave me alone, AT&T. Leave me alone, AT&T.
Yeah, Xfinity is a good example. The Xfinity Wi-Fi, which is everywhere in Petaluma, I don't want to be on it because a lot of times there's nothing on it. So I turn off Wi-Fi, but I really don't want to turn off Wi-Fi. That's overkill. So they just need to do a better job of communicating that those control center buttons don't turn off Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, they disconnect the current Wi-Fi or Bluetooth connection.
It's the same with split screen on iPad. A lot of people just thought it was gone because they couldn't drag from the left of the screen anymore to start a split view. You have to do it from the dock now, and they didn't know what was wrong. Their iPad was just broken because none of that stuff. Yeah, there are pop-ups that eventually come up, but hundreds of millions of people use these things, and there's no clean way to educate them, and that's something Apple has to fix.
Yeah, they do. They do videos and stuff, but there's no manuals. Nobody would read them anyway, even if they made them. So... anyways, if you want to turn off, really turn off Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, you still can. You just have to do it in settings. And actually, this is a better explanation than the, oh my God, it doesn't turn off Bluetooth. It does actually something very useful. Yeah. It's just not what you think it was. It wasn't what you
thought.
It's
not what it used to do.
It's not what it used to do.
I'm still waiting for my long press to choose specifically among several Bluetooth and Wi-Fi things to connect to. You can?
Yeah, long press.
Working on mine.
Long press.
Well, long press gives you more. It doesn't let. I don't think.
Oh no, it gives you more choices. Yeah. It doesn't give you all the. Right. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. That's not long press. That's 3D touch.
Sorry.
Long press on iPad. 3D touch on.
I did notice that. It is nice. It does give you other options.
Yeah, I really like that.
I think there's still a few things that the iPhone sends you to settings for that you feel like. I feel like you could just pass me the salt shaker that's right there at your table rather than ask me to get up and go into the kitchen and get another salt. I'm just asking.
It's hard.
She's passive aggressive, iPhone.
It's hard. Think about it. I mean, there's so many users. There's so many different ways of thinking about it. And there's only so much screen real estate. This UI stuff is I can imagine the debates that go on internally, probably all the time.
People hate learning anything.
Right. Right.
I don't want to know that there's this thing called Wi-Fi. I want it to believe that it's
people. Ideally, it would just be intuitive and it would do kind of what you intuitively thought it would do. But that's, you know, everybody has a different intuition about all of this.
And some people have nothing, no knowledge of how things work. And other people want to manage it to the minutest detail.
Exactly. Yeah. For those people, Android.
I don't have to know how a fuel injector works. I do have to know that a car needs gas and oil and where those things go in the engine. That's my difference.
I was very happy that my iPhone did not split open while charging. Some people say it does.
Two people.
Well, one person.
Really?
Two people.
There's two. There's one person who's it split while charging, and one person got it out of the box, and it was
these are swollen. From a swollen lithium-ion battery.
Yes.
Always not good. But inevitable in, you know, I mean, these things happen. I'm sure Apple immediately, gave her a new one.
I asked Jerry Hildenbrand from Android Central, who's like a radio engineer, and he's like, he gave me the statistics from Yale that out of so many formula times pi 100 hours, a lithium-ion battery will fail, and you'll have this many per devices made.
There you go.
His thing was like, oh, this split open so cleanly. I'm not worried about incendiary problems with this. Yes. I was like, okay, Jerry, good.
That's how it should have happened. Yeah. It's the breakaway iPhone. It's intended to split.
Well, there's always, when there's a large, so the problem with the Samsung Galaxy Note 7 is that it was much higher than was acceptable. Like there's a certain amount of failure rate with lithium ion for every phone. And every year you'll find almost any phone manufactured at scale will have a few problems with swollen batteries or batteries that don't hold a charge or batteries that will not charge to begin with, or batteries that do burn. But it's when they go beyond that normal failure rate. And I hate calling any failure rate normal, but lithium ion is not a stable technology. When you go anything beyond those rates, that's when it becomes worrisome. And that's when you have things like the Galaxy Note recall. This has been two so far, so it's pretty good.
It's not too bad. Microsoft has killed its Groove music service. Poor Microsoft. They just can't win. Meanwhile, Apple says we've got over 30 million subscribers. We are growing.
Again, those are paying subscribers.
Paid subscribers.
Yeah, free tier.
10 million more since December, 3 million more since June. That's about keeping pace with Spotify's growth rate, although, of course, they're not quite as big as Spotify. You know what's going to help? When I can put Apple Music on my Series 3 watch, which I still can't do.
No, it's not out yet. It's a bunch of features that are coming this fall, like Apple Pay person-to-person, Apple Music on the Apple Watch.
I'm like, one of the chief reasons you wanted a LTE-connected watch is so you could listen to music if you left your iPhone behind.
No, I want to listen to audiobooks and podcasts, and there's signs that they might do that, but it's not on any official roadmap.
If I could put my audio, my current audiobook on my...
Yeah.
There's enough storage. It's not bad.
And just go out with your AirPods on. It's fantastic.
I can't find my AirPods. I'm so devastated.
Oh, no. Do you use Find My AirPods?
No, you can't because it says they're not connected right now.
Yeah.
But as soon as they connect, I'll let you know.
Boy, you'll find out.
I'm not sure if I brought them to Europe and left them there or took them out of my bag because I didn't want to bring them to Europe. I didn't think I did.
No.
And then
I'll tell you how I lost.
How'd you lose yours?
I lost mine. I found them, but it took a little while. It turns out that I had discovered something at a dinner party that you can fit that little case right in the little pocket on your
I'm sure it's jacket. In some Scotty vest pocket somewhere.
Well, no, it wasn't a Scotty vest though. It was a dress jacket.
Yeah.
And they have those little pockets.
Little pocket. Yeah.
And I found that
it's called a watch pocket.
Right, and then
don't you have a watch and then I couldn't to put find in there? It.
I do not have a watch to put in, but I did. But it works good for a DxO camera, and it fits also the little headphones, and it took me a couple of days to figure out. And I was like in Amsterdam, really worried about the fact that I knew that they're here somewhere. I just can't figure out where.
I've looked everywhere, but I'm sure it's exactly what I did. It's in some pocket somewhere because I have way too many pockets. But I just ordered another pair because I love them so much. I don't want to be without them. So there. Mm. Plus, now that I have a Series 3 watch. I really have to. That's it, right? There's no earphone jack hidden away on this, right?
Nope.
Gotta get some Bluetooths. Can you pair it? You could pair it to other Bluetooth headphones, I guess. How about the Apple TV 4K? I took my time ordering it. Now it's 5 weeks out. Are people getting it yet or the Apple
TV? Yeah, I mean, you had to get it right away. I think it's so funny because there's I forget who it is. It might be Neil Seibert, but someone always tweets about the disconnect between a lot of the tech industry and a lot of people's buying habits. And this was, Apple TV 4K doesn't do X, Y, Z, but then, it's all sold out. And I was lucky. I bought mine the first day. I literally landed at the airport, ran to the Apple store, bought my Apple TV. I just bought the LG C7P.
Perfect. Yep.
Because it does both 4K HDR.
yeah,
and Dolby Vision, and you plug that in, Leo, and things like the beginning of Jessica Jones is suddenly like so bright and colorful. Daredevil looks red, and iTunes, there wasn't a lot. I got it actually right before the Apple TV shipped, and there wasn't a lot of HDR content. And I care about HDR way more than 4K.
Much better, much more important. I agree.
And then iTunes came out, and there's a lot of the movies that I recently bought. And also because HDR includes the P3 color space, I was just watching like the end of Guardians of the Galaxies 2, Galaxy 2, and the reds and the greens, and I am never going back. It is transformative.
So the problems that Nilay Patel and others have pointed out are just, you need to know. I don't think there are deal breakers, but no Atmos, who cares? I don't want sound coming from
That's coming in a future. I don't know why that didn't ship with it, but it's coming in a future update. If you want
no HDR, 4K HDR from YouTube, but that's an issue with the YouTube format.
They use VP9 to encode 4K for YouTube, and Apple is only supporting HEVC right now. And one of those that hammer, that immovable object, and irresistible force yield.
Yeah,
they have one of them has to break.
The weird thing, you'd have thought they'd have a good deal with Disney, but they don't. So neither Disney nor Marvel movies will come in 4K HDR.
Yeah, which includes Star Wars, too, because Disney now owns 80% of our childhoods.
That's kind of a bummer, but not the end of the world. The one big one that you should pay attention to is it insists on doing upscaling itself, even if you had something else like your TV that could do a better job. So some 1080 content is not going to look very good. It's going to upscale it to 4K, and it's not going to look good. That's what – I don't have one. Have you noticed
that? I have not run into that problem yet. I'm sure – I'm going to have to ask, you know, for some samples of that. I'm sure it happens because Apple prioritized normal person plugs the box in. We don't want them to get the screen where it changes, goes black, maybe doesn't come back, maybe does come back. But in the Apple TV, not the previous one, but the one before that, you could do like some Konami code where you did like down, up, left, right, button, 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 and it would give you a video selector. And I think if they re-enabled that, nerds would be super happy, and non-nerds would never have to know that it exists.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Because sometimes you want to turn the upscaling off and let something else like your TV
Or if the SDR is not nicely converting to HDR or whatever. Because what Apple does is it outputs the best possible signal for your television. So, for example, mine, it will always spit out 4K Dolby Vision if it can. That's its priority. And just some stuff may not look good that way.
Same thing with refresh rate. It'll scale it up to 60 hertz as well.
Because they want the UI to look really good, but some people would rather prioritize not for UI, but for
So Apple picks its own video upscaling and does it itself. And as usual with Apple, you know, it doesn't give you a choice. But I agree. Maybe they can put Konami code back in.
The one thing that is an issue that Apple can control is that the studio gets to pick which version of HDR it gets. Like Apple will get HDR 10 or it will get Dolby Vision. The studio gets to decide. So some of the earlier televisions only had HDR 10 and no Dolby Vision. Right. And you can't – some people think, well, I should just be able to choose HDR 10, but Apple literally does not have
that's encoded into the content. Nothing you can do about it. All right. Any other small bits or pieces we would cover before – oh, this is really important. And good news for you, Renee. Drunk canoeing is no longer a driving offense in Canada.
Is it all kinds of drunk canoeing? If you're drunk with maple syrup and a moose, is it different than if you're drunk with a bee? I don't know. I don't know the specific.
But what about drunk kayaking?
Why won't somebody think about the moose calf?
There is some other good news from Canada this week, though, Leo. Yesterday, our new governor general was sworn in, and she is an astronaut who speaks six languages.
I feel incredibly lazy
right now.
Your governor general is the most awesome human. What does the governor general do?
It is the Queen's representative in country. So when the Queen of Canada is legally a separate entity from the Queen of the UK and the other Commonwealth territories. So when the Queen is not in Canada, she acts as the vice regal agent. So she's commander-in-chief, head of state, and all those other things, unless and until Queen Elizabeth says otherwise.
She's got an amazing resume, including being an astronaut.
Yeah.
And so Julie Payette is now the Governor General of Canada. And should the Queen need some help, or maybe even want to go into space, Julie can help.
We have this nice thing in Canada where if the parliament reaches an impasse, the government can be dissolved and you have to go to an election and she'd be the one that dissolves it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. before we canonize this woman, let's just ask ourselves, how much money did she raise for the Queen's reelection campaign? I'm guessing it's less than the people who contributed to our.
She bought her way in.
She's queen for life. She doesn't have to be elected.
She just, you know. She's so I mean, she's an astronaut, so that's, you know, great. So she's had her life in government jobs. She's never had to work in the free market.
Hey,
I'm
hoping in previous episodes you talked about High Sierra and all that. Yes.
Yes.
Ish, yeah.
Ish.
Yes.
We talked about the new file system. We talked about
APFS and all that. In fact, I should have told you. I should have given you a horn or a button or something to do if I covered an issue that you'd already covered, because I haven't had a chance to listen to the last couple of. Thank you. Ring the bell. In perfect sync now, by the way. Did you cover the EFI issue?
The security EFI issue?
Yeah.
I wasn't on last week, so I defer to Andy.
I think not, because it came out.
We did talk about firmware.
It came out. So. This is not a Mac specific problem, because it turns out that EFI, which is the firmware in most modern computers, when it gets updated, sometimes the update can fail without warning and you will never get another chance. So there's some research been done that said a lot of Macs have out of date firmware, even if Apple had pushed out updates to the firmware code. They did the testing with Macs because it was easier. There's no reason to assume that PCs don't have exactly the same issue. This company, Duo Security, analyzed 73,000 Apple Macs used by its customers and compared the firmware version with the version the computer ought to have given its operating system. And a surprisingly large number, 4.2% of the Macs, had the wrong EFI version, suggesting that the update had failed without warning and wasn't attempted again. This could be a security issue, because there are known security flaws in older EFI.
Also, you want the new ones because they introduce new features. Like High Sierra pushes system integrity protection down to the firmware level, I believe, and you want those definitions and that protection put
now, in place. When Apple was approached with this, they did point out that one of the things that's in High Sierra, and I suspect this is not a coincidence, is a weekly EFI check.
Yeah.
It's my guess that if you're running High Sierra, this would be a good reason to run High Sierra, that if your EFI is not up to date, that the High Sierra will eventually catch this and give you an update. Although it's unclear whether it merely catches hacked EFI or actually out-of-date EFI. But I would guess that if it doesn't catch out-of-date EFI, it will soon, since they've got that check built in. That wouldn't be a hard thing, I think, to add. But I wanted to make sure we mentioned that. And so that's a good reason. If you can't upgrade to High Sierra and you haven't, I can see no reason not to. Oh, I can, actually, if you have a Fusion drive. If you have...
Well, you can still update. It just won't do the APFS.
You won't get APFS.
Part of the update. Okay. Yeah, you'll get everything
else. Has it happened that APFS update is attempted and then people lose data, or is that not? They're pretty good at detecting problems.
There might have been a few issues. I don't think they were related to Fusion, or because it won't do hard drives either. And like companies like Drobo will tell you, don't do anything with our product.
Don't mess with it. Yeah. It has its own.
Leave those on HFS Plus.
Yeah.
Most of those makers have actually put letters on their sites saying, here's what you should think about before you start doing this stuff. And the makers of Drobo did something like that too.
Yeah. Disk utility on High Sierra does not recognize unformatted disks, according to Tiny Apps, unless, little tip for you, you click View, Show All Devices, quit disk utility, and then relaunch it. Okay, just a little fix, a little workaround. That is weird.
Sure, we'll get that'll be a .1 release.
And by the way, the Serenity came up with a fix for the Wi-Fi thing. Does that actually work? If you are, did you get to a captive portal and lost access? I don't know how you would know if you lost connectivity, but if you did, turn the Wi-Fi off and on again, and it's fine. Is that right, Renee?
I do that all the time. I definitely
maybe make a
habit
of it.
I don't recall if that's for the same issue or not, but she has done a boatload of testing with Apple Watch.
You know what? Go to imore.com.
I'm still testing. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm done. I'm just saying, read Serenity's articles.
I'm still testing whether shaking the phone makes a web page load faster. So I've been doing a lot of research.
It's how you shake it.
I just walk around, and sometimes, it's how you shake it?
Yeah, you got to do it like a Polaroid.
Like a Polaroid.
I've been doing it all wrong. I've been shaking it like a hammer and not like a Polaroid. And because I feel like that shaking is telling the phone that, no, really, I want this to load right now. And anyway, so it's, and now with facial ID, I'm hoping that it just show, it, I don't have to shake it, that I just have to show my disappointment with the phone.
Angry face.
And that shame will cause it to download the page faster. That's really that's the big feature that I think Apple needs.
Shame on you.
Apple says that they improved the gyroscopes just to cope with augmented reality, but it's really so that they can detect a wider range of anger.
We're going to take a break, come back with your picks of the week. Gentlemen, start your picks. But meanwhile, let me tell you what saved my life as I was flying hours and hours on an airplane. Texture! Texture is awesome. Texture is like Netflix for magazines. One low monthly fee that's actually a lot less than subscribing to a couple of magazines. You get all the magazines, 200 magazines on your phone, on your tablet, on your iPad. It looks beautiful on the iPad Pro. This is kind of like, no wonder Apple said it's one of the top 2016 top iPad apps. It's kind of the must-have app. With Texture, you get to read all the articles you want in all the magazines you want. And it's inevitable that there's always something, you know, in Rolling Stone or Vanity Fair or The New Yorker that I want to read. But if you were to subscribe to 10 magazines, you'd not only spend a lot more, imagine the clutter. The coffee table would be groaning under its burden. And I always felt guilty throwing out those magazines. In fact, actually, it was what The New Yorker was, which is weekly, I felt guilty. I'd see this pile of unread New Yorkers, and I got to read that. It actually made me feel bad. With Texture, I don't even worry about it. You automatically, you pick the favorites. You automatically download them. So even when you're on an airplane with no connectivity, you've got the magazines you want to read. And you get every page, including the ads, by the way. You get everything that's in the magazine, not just the current edition on the newsstands, but all back issues, video. You get a wonderful curated section of highlights, stories just for you, new and noteworthy stories, daily news, top 10 reads, collections. So if you want to read more about Tom Petty, they've got a collection of articles remembering Tom Petty from Reuters, Rolling Stone, and Men's Journal. That's really cool. I mean, it's just the best. I want you to try it. I've got a free two-week subscription for you. If you go to texture.com/twit. Texture, it works great on the iPhone or any smartphone, but I tell you, if you've got a tablet, if you've got a good tablet, I love photography. The imagery in the photography magazines like National Geographic and Shutterbug looks 10 times better, and of course it does. It's not screened to print. It's right there on the page. You're getting the high quality. You can zoom in. I'm just a big fan. Texture. Texture.com/twit. Don't take my word for it. Try it for 2 weeks. I think you'll agree. It's the best way to read all those magazines. There's still so much great stuff being done on magazines. All right. Time for our picks of the week. Eeny, meeny, miny. I'm going to start with Renee Ritchie from iMore.com.
So my pick, to the surprise of no one, is the latest generation of Apple Watch bands. And the new one they introduced is the Sport Loop.
I'm so mad at you.
Why?
I want the black Sport Loop, and they don't make it for 42 millimeters anymore. It ran out, but you showed one on your Instagram.
You can still, some stores have it in stock. So you can go to the Apple store, and you might find it on the shelf.
It's Velcro, I'm sorry, hook and loop. But
it's a hook and loop.
Hook and loop. But it's a better hook and loop, right?
I mean, I'm not a Velcro expert.
Are you a hick and looper?
I'm a hick. But so they have a variety of colors. And there are some Nike colors as well. But basically, I would show you mine, but I actually gave it to a friend of mine this morning because he tried it on and didn't want to give it back to me. So I told him you could just keep it.
What looks best with the gray band?
The black. The black or the white.
That's the one I want.
Are both really nice looking.
That's the one I want.
I'm wearing a variation of the white. I think it's called Pearl. Mine has stripes on it, though. But you can get a version that does not have stripes on it. Just I'm finding this.
You shouldn't wear that. I'm sorry. You shouldn't wear that after Labor Day. That's illegal.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Or after Canadian Thanksgiving, at least. But the Sports Loop is super comfortable. You loop it through. You pull on it. It's you can adjust it to the size, just like any of Apple Loops. You can adjust it throughout the day if, you know, your wrist is feeling a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller. But it's not metal like the Milanese Loop, and it's not leather like the Leather Loop. It really is the same sort of really comfortable nylon fabric that the sports bands are famous for.
I love your tip. My local Apple store still has one.
Yes.
Yay!
Yep, you can get it, Leo. And it's got flecks of color in it. So it really, it looks great with the ceramic watch, but it looks great with all the watches because there's little flecks of gold, little flecks of different colors in it.
Yeah.
So it really sets it up. And it looks classy enough. Like, you can wear it for a workout, absolutely. And they recommend you do it backwards for water activities because you can more easily, you know, open it up and close it again if you want to. But then you can go wear it out later if you want to because it looks really nice in person. So if you want something more flashy, they have it with neon colors. They have the pinks and they have the bright yellows and they have an olive version too. So you can get as many colors as you want. I like the black one. The white one is really nice too. But the Sport Loop, I'm really happy with it. It is the next generation in Apple Sport Bands.
I think I actually have to go to the store though. It doesn't look like I can buy it online and then pick it up. I have to actually go to the store to get it. Does that make sense? I thought you would be able to do that.
You should be able to.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Mm. It's not letting me. It still says breakdown. Unavailable.
Breakdown.
Ugh.
Yeah. And the one other tip I'll give you is Apple Watch bands are seasonal. Some people were like, why can't I still get the old colors?
Right.
Apple stops making the old colors and makes the new ones. So if you see a color you like, just grab it because their chances are, depending on when exactly it is, you may not get any more of that stock.
Which, this is a bonus pick, which wireless charger are you using?
For the iPhone?
Yeah, because Apple doesn't make one.
I'm using the Mophie. I generally go towards Belkin because I think that Apple spends a lot of time rigorously testing the Belkin stuff because they're almost always a first adopter of Apple's new technologies. But the Belkin one's just a little bit bigger than the Mophie one, and I like the smaller one. And my usual caveat with the wireless chargers is Palm got this so right with the Touchstone. It was just so magnetic. But ever since then, especially Qi chargers, you have to really make sure you put it down and you visibly look that it is charging. Because if you are off at all, or if it is close enough to your bed, well, you will knock it, or you have a pet who might walk across it or something, it could theoretically not charge. It might be dislodged just enough that the magnet is no longer in place and it doesn't charge. So just, I like the Mophie right now. If you do get it, though, make sure you put your phone down and you see that wireless charging image.
I have a solution, and that leads to my pick of the week,
woo-hoo!
Which I've tested, and it works, and it's now only $30. This is from Tilt, T-Y-L-T, the V-U with an umlaut, so that makes it the wireless charger. You can't miss. First of all, it's an easel, which is really nice. So the phone just sits right on it. It's very easy, but it has three coils. So if you put the phone on it, it will charge. And it doesn't slip off. It doesn't slide away because it's not lying down. It's sitting up. And I love the V. So it comes in all sorts of fun colors. And I've recommended it before, but I just want to report back. It works great with the iPhone 8.
Awesome.
And it doesn't have that issue of, you know, your perfect aim for your Qi charger. The V.
Nice thing about a standard.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that Apple supports Qi now because that means Qi is going to be everywhere.
And it looks like they're going to force Qi to evolve very quickly to meet what they want to do.
Yeah, as they should. Andy Inako, pick of the week, sir.
I got a pick and a tip. We mentioned before about user's guides for iOS 11. Actually, Apple usually does have a really good really good user's guides to their new stuff on the iBook store. And just double checked in. Yes, they've got the iPhone user guide for iOS 11 and the iPad user guide for iOS 11, both on the iBooks store. If you just do a search for it, you'll find both of them. And
see, and I was
really
saying there's no manual, but there is.
Yeah. They are literally the missing manual, only without having to pay David any for anything. Yes,
nice.
So they're really, really good. It's not like a PDF of the fold-out thing you would get packed with a box.
Oh,
it really is like a commercial book, book quality. And the second is kind of a tip that's kind of my standard advice. Every time that Apple comes out with a new piece of hardware, particularly if it's a radically new design like the iPhone X, for instance, less the iPhone 8 and the 8 Plus, for the first couple weeks, you might want to be a little bit more ambitious about taking back things that have problems with them. Like if the iPhone 8 has the glass back, and now for years you've been putting your old iPhone on the armrest of your sofa, and then now because of the glass back, it slid off and smashed to pieces on your tile floor. You might want to consider, particularly in the first 2 or 3 weeks of the release of a brand new thing, take it back to the Apple store and see what they do, because they do normally have their "we're awesome" policy, but they also, I haven't heard any news about this in the past couple of years, but I knew that last time I talked to people who weren't allowed to talk to me about this a few years ago, Apple is often stores have like a hunting list or a request list from the mothership, saying that if someone comes in with a brand new iPhone 8 that is having a Wi-Fi connectivity issue, and you've determined that's not due to software, swap it out, give them a brand new one, because we want to see iPhones that are having Wi-Fi issues. Or if you have one that has a cracked back but not a cracked front. Again, they'll actually put it into. I've been there. They've actually put it in what looks like the sarcophagus that they fired Spock's body to the Genesis planet in. It goes directly to Cupertino because they want to find out how their designs are performing in the real world so that they can improve either manufacturing or improve the design. That doesn't mean that, again, this doesn't change the warranty. It doesn't change what they are likely to do. But realize that I haven't heard any contradiction to the idea that, again, in the first few weeks, they have their eyes open to, oh, well, look, there's a broken connector at the base. Doesn't even matter that you mishandled the device, so long as you weren't trying to shoot a YouTube video, if you know what I mean, about how much abuse these things contain. It's worth an extra choice. If you would have been hesitant before to say, I really shouldn't say that I dropped it in a bowl of pudding and forgot it was there until the pudding was cooked. It's possible that, again, at your local store, they've received an email from Cupertino saying, we're looking for food-related ingress problems. And maybe they will swap you out a brand new phone. So something to keep in mind.
Thank you, Andrew. Andy Inako, it's the Chicago Sun-Times at CWOB.com. Finally, last but most expensive, Alex Lindsay
from the Pixel Corps. I was thinking about really expensive, and then I decided not to, so we'll save that for another day. I buy a lot of tripods, little ones and big ones, and ones that I can fit in my pack and ones that'll fit in my carry-ons and everything else. And the one that I've kind of coalesced around, at least for my backpack, is I always thought of it as Smart Tree, but I always have to look for it.
S-M-A-T-R-E-E. Smatry. Yeah. I never heard of this.
Smatry. So this one, they make a lot of different little monopods, but I think this one's the best one. Now, of course, it's the most expensive one, but it is, it's $43. It's not That's like not it's a bad. $500 tripod. Yeah. It goes about 4 feet high. So it's not enough to kind of, you know, take a, you know, be full size there, but you can set it on something. Now this one's built for the Osmo, which I have, but that's not really what the nice thing is, it's just a quarter 20. And that quarter 20 top will fit in any phone. I use it more for spherical cameras than I do for 40 inches. I'm sorry, not quite 4 feet. The nice thing is that the base is a little bit beefier. They make there's a lot of these little monopods, and a lot of them have really cheap bases. And then it just you're afraid that your little 360 camera is going to fall over. So this one's a little bit beefier. You can unscrew that and use it as a selfie stick or use it as a general stick. And you can use the base. It's also a quarter 20. So you can put, if you just want like a little base to hold up your camera, you can use that as well. And it's relatively light and it fits in my Rush 24. So it is, I have probably bought in the last year, 8 or 10 of these tripods, trying to figure out. We build kits for clients and stuff like that, and that you need little tripods like this. And so, and this one is definitely the beefiest of the little, easy to use tripods.
You would put a camera on this for Skyping or something like that, or.
Yeah. Well,
we wouldn't put a DSLR on it. It's too heavy. No, it's too thin for that. Yeah.
No, but if you have like a Theta, or if you have of course it's built for the Osmos, but if you have a Theta, or if you have the Samsung,
I can put my Gear 360 on it. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and what's nice about it is a tripod, of course, shows up a lot in your 360. So having the base be all the way down at the bottom means it's very small and easy to paint out later, which is something that's important to me. So, if you use something like Affinity Image or Photo, Affinity Photo, they have a little thing built into it that lets you go into a 360 mode and paint things out in a more intelligent way. So Affinity Photo is, you know,
that's a good recommendation for Affinity Photo. Wow.
Oh yeah. It's the secret to the operation. So I think I might've talked about it earlier, but maybe not. I maybe have forgot about it, but I use that probably every day. But this combined with that, the what's nice about it is that you have this tripod with a long neck or, you know, long neck down to a little piece. And so now you have this little thing that you sit down. And if you think about it, when you're setting it down, you set it on something that doesn't have a lot of detail as best you can with wherever you want to shoot. And then what happens is you take your photo or you take your video. If you take your video, it's a little bit more complicated because you basically paint out that little section and then comp it back in Final Cut or After Effects. But if it's a still, you literally in Affinity Photo can just say, you know, project in, you know, I think it's project 360 or whatever, a live view of 360. And now you're in a 360 environment. You can rotate and look straight down at it because usually the bottom of your spherical looks like a big, you know, it's unusable, right?
It's where your hand is, your tripod is.
You can now see your tripod and you can see what it's covering and you can just sit there with your little clone tool in that live view and paint it all out and then unwrap it. And the key is that you're not losing data, because if you use like a polar coordinate conversion, you're actually doing something that destroys the sharpness of the image. This is a lossless way to knock that, get rid of that tripod. So for, you know, little videos and, you know, for little projects and stills and so on and so forth, where you really want to get rid of that base, this combined with that is a great tool.
That's two tips in one. The Smatry Smapole DS1, which is about $40, $45 on Amazon, $43 on Amazon, and
I think it's about the same price
for iOS Affinity Photo, which is a great photo editor for a lot
and
of
I
things,
use, but. I use Affinity Photo on the Mac too.
They have a Mac version. I didn't know that. Program.
That's the one that I'm using, and it's about the same price as the tripod, $49.99. They have a great one on the iPad that I have, but the one that I use on a day to day basis.
Does the iPad version do the same thing with the 360s?
I don't know. I haven't tried that. I do little color corrections and stuff like that, but I'm using it may. So I'll check it out and maybe come back and report back.
Yeah. I didn't realize, and they have a Windows version too. Wow. Mr. Alex Lindsay, you are the greatest. Thanks for being here. We love it when you're here at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter. If you want to follow him and find out what's going on with the Pixel Core and all, I know you have you opened it up now?
We have. We're still structuring it. We're still getting it off the ground, but you can definitely get more information about it at the website. We have opened it up. Also, I've started to play with Flipboard as far as like, I spent a lot of time in Flipboard in the morning, and I've started to build little magazines. So if you search for like Pixel Core or other things like that, you might be able to find me up there if you want to follow what I'm following.
That's so 2010. That's great.
I know, but I use Flipboard all the time. And so I was like, I might as well keep it. Someone was asking me, like, where do you put your magazines? I'm like, well, it's where I keep them all to remember where they are. I still like Flipboard. I don't know of anything else that is so easy to use. I think a lot of us are still stuck in that thing.
I miss Flipboard.
Thank you, Alex. Great to see you. Thank you, Andy Yanako, Chicago Sun-Times. Go to CWOB.com, his website. Do you have links there for your Flickr and your Instagram and all that? Because his images are so great.
Yep. I'm about to post. I've got the Instagram. I was posting it Instagram while I was taking my photo walk with the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus. But sometime later today, hopefully I will have the original pictures from Flickr. So if you want to see them at full size, the ones on Instagram are unedited, but, you know, Instagram might recompress or do something weird to them.
Oh, proudly powered by WordPress. I notice.
I like it. I like the new templates.
This template is really cool. I really like this template.
Yeah, and I've barely even customized it. I'm still working on it a little bit.
I might have to do this. This is really nice looking.
I really dig it. Yeah,
I'll make mine red so that people know it's not you.
Exactly. Well, no, we're part of the same umbrella of companies.
Yes.
But my iPhone 8 review is going to be for a couple of weeks because I'm going to be at the New York Comic Con all week long.
Oh,
and Apple times this thing nicely so that I get my loaner phone like a week before I spend 4 or 5 days taking pictures of cosplayers. So those three. If you want to know what it looks, how good pictures it can take of women and men in green makeup and ram horns, you will have your answers very well settled by my review.
You can also catch Andy on the 5x5 network at the Anatco Almanac and on Relay.fm and the Material Podcast. But there again, everything Andy does is linked at CWOB.com, which turns out, I didn't even know it, to be anatco.com. But nobody knows how to spell that.
Exactly. If I say CWOB, people
how do you spell that, Andy? How do you spell that?
Yeah. That was my original URL, and now it's actually, I don't really use it that much, but now it's a 4-letter domain, and so it's really
perfect.
Cool. It makes me look like I'm old-timey and cool and classic.
Renee Ritchie's at imore.com. That's the place I go whenever I get a new thing, a new doohickey, and I want to know how to use it. They're great on all of that. And, of course, tomorrow you'll be paying attention to the Pixel launch from Google. We got a big Pixel event coming up. I know it's the other guys, but if you're interested in what Google's coming,
our Android Central team will be there.
Yeah, we need competition. It shouldn't just be Samsung and Apple on the, you know, owning it all. If
will it have a headphone jack? The world needs to know.
That's the big question, isn't it? Yeah, we will be covering that tomorrow, starting at 9 a.m. Pacific. Florence Ion and I will be heading the team that comments on the stream. So if you can watch Google stream directly, of course, they're live streaming it on YouTube. But you could also watch us talk about it at twit.tv. 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern time. That's 1600 UTC. We'll go live when Google goes live tomorrow for those big announcements. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. If you want to stop by, watch the show, and hang out with our fine chat room at irc.twit.tv. We would love it if you did. But if you can't, we make on-demand audio and video available of everything we do for this show, twit.tv/MBW. I'm sorry, Andy, on that page has a big arrow saying all shows over his head. Something went wrong in the production.
That's okay. It makes me look exotic.
we need that drag and drop in iOS. Quick, stat, pronto. We also are on every podcast appliance that's out there, Stitcher and Slacker and Overcast and Pocket Cast. So do subscribe. That way you'll get every episode. You can even listen on your Echo or your Google Home. On the Echo, just say, hey, Echo, listen to Mac Break Weekly on TuneIn, and you can hear the latest episode. Or listen live if you go, hey, Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn. Thanks for being here. But now, my friends, it's time to get back to work because break time is over.